wird heute Nacht nicht untergehen. Und die Welt zählt laut bis 10.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Esperando a que el sol esté a nuestro alcance, camino ese habló encontrarse con alguien. Su odio matutino, su segundo nombre y algún sueño vencido lo acompañan muy bien. Lidia va con picardías y el servicio postal nos llevaba.
Yeah. nuclear holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Welcome back, everybody, to the David Pakman Show. My name is Luke Beasley. I'm going to be filling in for David today while he is away on paternity leave. Obviously, exciting stuff going on. Huge congratulations to David and his family. We have a massive show to get into, so let's dive right in. Last night, the January 6th committee held their first big public hearing where they started the process of going through all the information they have gathered over the last number of months. And I thought that the chairman, Congressman Thompson, as well as Liz Cheney, who kind of led the presentation for the night, did a really good job of outlining a few main points. So we're going to do a bird's eye view look at these main points, and then we're going to dive into some specific moments. The first is Donald Trump was absolutely supportive, and they made this very clear, of the rioters. He was watching it unfold, and he was supportive of it. And as we're going to get into in just a second, he was even cheering on, supportive of, the rioters who wanted to kill his own vice president. The second big thing was he absolutely was told by people close to him repeatedly that the claims he was making were false. I think we had all kind of assumed that, but that was shown as well. People like former Attorney General William Barr and his own daughter, Ivanka Trump, were aware that the election was not stolen. There's no evidence for that. And yet Trump kept perpetuating it. The third big thing was there was a clear and planned, coordinated effort to attack the Capitol by the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. And the reason why I say that is because there was some question of, was it just a protest that got out of hand, or was it a premeditated event by some people? And at least in the case of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, it was premeditated, and that's a big deal. The fourth big thing, and this is the most important part of all of this, is Donald Trump was the first U.S. president in all of our history to not respect the peaceful transition of power. And that is huge, because that is absolutely necessary to holding together our democracy. And he just spit all over it because he was just upset he lost an election. He stomped on our entire history of doing a really good job. The person who's in power, if they lose, they respectfully exit and do what they can to make it a peaceful transition. And so that put our democracy in peril. And that's a huge point we have to keep stating so that everyone does not forget it. Obviously, these videos can't be super, super long, so I can't go through everything that I'd want to from this hearing, because there was a lot jam-packed into it. The stuff that I can't cover, I'll try to get to some of it on my own show. So you can find that at Luke Beasley on YouTube. If you're watching this on YouTube or listening to the podcast, it'll be in the description box, a link to my channel. But definitely check out my show, Luke Beasley, on YouTube. But I also encourage you to watch the whole hearing if you haven't already yourself, because there is tons of stuff that are super, super important for you to be aware of that came out of that hearing. So the first humongous bombshell that came out of this hearing was it was exposed that Donald Trump was supportive of the rioters who were chanting "Hang Mike Pence." He was made aware that that was happening, and he was supportive of it. Let's take a look.
And aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with this sentiment, quote, "Maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence," quote, "deserves it."
I know because there's already been coverage of a lot of this and you've probably already run it through in your head, you can get a little numbed out to it. But really think about this. The president of the United States was supportive of a mob of people who wanted to murder his vice president. You would watch that in a movie? Like, that's not even something... That would be fiction, right? If you ever heard that type of story. It's a fictional... No, the president of the United States wanted his vice president to get murdered. That's what we just watched. And we can't forget that these crazy things happened or get numbed out to them. The next big thing I want to look at is William Barr, Trump's attorney general, testified in a pre-recorded interview about how he looked into it, saw there was no fraud that would have made any difference in the election, no wide-scale, widespread fraud. And then we'll play the clip of Ivanka, who got asked about Barr's statement and pretty much said, yeah, I mean, if Barr said it, like, I believe it. So pretty much I don't agree with my dad's statements. Let's take a look.
Told the president in no uncertain terms that I did not see evidence of fraud and that would have affected the outcome of the election. And frankly, a year and a half later, I haven't seen anything to change my mind on that.
How did that affect your perspective about the election when Attorney General Barr made that statement?
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he was saying.
So Donald Trump's attorney general and his daughter are both well aware. And William Barr told Trump that Trump's claims were false. And yet he kept on going with them. And the amount of damage that did, if he had stopped at some point before January 6th, and realize, you know what, I thought it was stolen, but looks like all the evidence has come out, it wasn't actually stolen. We would have saved so much damage from being done to our democracy. The next big thing that happened in the hearing was a documentarian testified under oath. And again, I encourage you guys to go watch this hearing for yourself, but I'll give you a quick summary. So the documentarian had been allowed access in the days leading up to January 6th and on January 6th to follow around Enrique Tarrio, who is the leader of the Proud Boys. And throughout that, I guess they wanted him or were okay with him making a documentary about the organization or whatever was going on. And what he captured and witnessed throughout that process proved what I had mentioned earlier, that the Proud Boys, in coordination with the Oath Keepers, had actually planned the events of that day. And we're just executing a plan to attack the Capitol. We'll look at some clips from that testimony that came out.
On January 5th, the night before the attack, you were with the head of the Proud Boys, Mr. Tarrio, in Washington, D.C. What happened?
We picked up his bags and went to get some other bags from the Phoenix Hotel, where we encountered Mr. Stuart Rhodes from the Oath Keepers. We drove down into the parking garage and filmed the scene of Mr. Tarrio and Mr. Rhodes and certain other individuals in that garage.
The committee learned that the Oath Keepers set up quick reaction forces outside of the city in Virginia where they stored arms. The goal of these quick reaction forces was to be on standby just in case President Trump invoked the Insurrection Act.
Did the Oath Keepers ever provide weapons to members?
I'm going to decline to answer that on Fifth Amendment grounds.
They're acting as if they're executing some military operation. So after the documentarian spoke, a female police officer recounted her experience trying desperately to defend the Capitol. And one of the stories she tells, she's holding one of those bike racks that doubles as a fence, and she gets shoved backwards, hits her head on a railing, and then onto the cement, and gets knocked out cold. So she goes through and walks through that, and then walks through the other traumatizing, horrible things that happened and that she witnessed that day. And that kind of brings me to my last big point on this. My baseline emotion watching all of this was just rage. At the beginning, I had thought about this a lot before, but at the beginning, because they pointed it out, it was top of mind for me that we have this long history of peaceful transitions of power. And while you and I both know some horrible things have happened in American history, we've failed miserably in the past many times. But the one thing we got right was that peaceful transition of power, and it's what kept our democracy alive. And Donald Trump was willing to let that all die, to let democracy in America die for his own gain, for his own benefit, because he wanted more to believe he won and to stay in power than just admitting he lost the election and moving along like every other president had done in the past. That's a fact we cannot let people lose sight of. That's how deeply selfish and narcissistic he is. He doesn't care about the greater good of the country, because if he did, he would have realized the claims he was making were false and then conceded and helped to make a peaceful transition of power. But that's not what he did. I'll be giving more of my thoughts on this on my show. Again, you can find that at Luke Beasley on YouTube. B-E-A-S-L-E-Y is how you spell my last name. Or if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to the podcast, it will be in the description box, a little link you can click to check me out. So we just discussed the January 6th hearings where some bombshell new information was revealed. Trump being supportive of the rioters who wanted to kill Mike Pence. They wanted to hang Mike Pence, and Trump supported that. Clear evidence showing that Trump was being repeatedly told by people around him that his election claims were false and much more. So even before these hearings, just the fact that they were happening enraged Trump. But then, of course, afterwards, he was not too happy. And before we take a look at what he said, the scary part about all this is if you watch the hearings, it was made so clear, something we already knew, but it was made really clear in these hearings, that all of this was motivated by Trump and the people perpetuating his same lies. People said after the fact who were arrested, the ones who had broken into the Capitol, I did this because President Trump told me to. Let's take a quick look at that.
What made me want to come was the fact that, you know, I had supported Trump all that time. I did believe, you know, that the election was being stolen. And Trump asked us to come.
He personally asked for us to come to D.C. that day. And I thought, for everything he's done for us, if this is the only thing he's going to ask of me.
And then people are reading his tweets while they're breaking into the Capitol.
Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution, giving states a chance to certify a corrected set of facts, not the fraudulent or inaccurate ones which they were asked to previously certify. U.S. demands the truth.
So all of this was caused by him telling these lies. And as was revealed, he was told by people close to him that what he was saying was not true, that there was no evidence for the claims he was making, but yet he kept going out and lying still. And the craziest part, too, is that we're a year and a half later, still no evidence of the claims he's made, and yet he's still going off about the election being stolen. And before the hearings happened, as well as after the hearings happened, with all these revelations that came out, his only response to all of it is to keep telling those lies. He took the Truth Social saying, and this is before the hearings, the Unselect Committee didn't spend 1 minute studying the reason that people went to Washington, D.C. in massive numbers, far greater than the fake news media is willing to report. He's so obsessed with that. Or that the Unselects are willing to even mention. Because January 6th was not simply a protest. It represented the greatest movement in the history of our country to make America great again. It was about an election that was rigged and stolen, random capitalizations for no reason, and a country that was about to go to hell. And look at our country now. And he puts out another truth saying the Unselect Committee of Political Thugs, essentially the same group who brought you the fully debunked and discredited Russia hoax and many others, refused to study and report, and Aniani goes to make the exact same point. And then we'll skip to after the hearings happened. So the Unselect Committee of Political Hacks refused to play any of the many positive witnesses and statements, refused to talk of the election fraud and irregularities that took place on a massive scale, and decided to use a documentary maker from fake news ABC to spin only negative footage. Our country is in such trouble. Well, I could not agree with that last statement more. Our country is in a lot of trouble, but for the opposite reasons than he would think. So what he's doing is so scary because we're a year and a half out and watching everything that has happened, all the damage that's been caused by his lies, his only response to all of that is to keep telling his lies. So what he's doing is setting up a situation where the exact same thing could happen again. This is a massive threat to our democracy. And while I totally recognize the Democrats have so many issues, and we should point those out, criticize them. What they will do, and what we know that Biden would do if he lost the next election, is concede and give up power. And that is what holds our democracy together. And so while I know a lot of people on the right think this statement comes off as hyperbolic, it's true. Donald Trump is the biggest threat right now to American democracy. Again, I know a lot of right-wingers hear that and they're like, oh my God, some lefty. But really think about it. In 2020, he was okay allowing our democratic process to fail for his own gain so that he could stay in power, all based off of lies. He was willing to let all that happen just for his own gain. How is that not the biggest threat if he's clearly trying to set up a situation where he can do it again? He's telling the same lies. And so we can't withstand another January 6th. We can't withstand having a president in power who refuses or does everything possible to the last second to keep himself in power, even if he lost the election. We just cannot survive that as a democracy. And so if you're on the right and you're reasonable at all, I beg you to think about, with all the issues you probably have with the left, on this, take a stand for democracy and the importance of having people in power who respect our democracy enough to want to give up power if they lose a fair and free election. Doesn't matter. We can figure out our disagreements later, but as of now, we should unite conservatives and liberals, and I mean the reasonable conservatives who don't believe the election lies, to do everything we can to prevent Trump from getting in power so that we don't have to go through that again, where maybe it goes worse next time. Because I can tell you, everything that went wrong for Trump in 2020 that caused Biden to eventually get in power, he's going to be ready and not allow those things to go wrong again. So we do have to take this seriously, and everyone who is even somewhat reasonable needs to unite to prevent him from getting back in power. Super appreciative to the David Pakman Show for having me fill in today. Don't forget to check out my channel, Luke Beasley, on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube or listening to the podcast, there will be a link in the description box. Definitely go check me out. We'll be right back with much more. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. This is Luke Beasley filling in for David today while he's away on paternity leave. If you like what you're seeing, definitely go check me out on YouTube. I have my own show. It's called The Luke Beasley Show. But you can just search Luke Beasley on YouTube and you will find it. Lots of good stuff going down there. So before we get into this next story, I just want to warn you, it's absolutely horrifying and heartbreaking. An 11-year-old girl who survived the Uvalde shooting spoke to Congress, testified in front of Congress about how she watched her teacher, she watched her friend get killed by the gunman who went into that school in Uvalde, Robb Elementary. And one of the stories you may have heard that's just absolutely horrifying is, she was afraid after the gunman had gone through, shot her friend, shot her teacher, that he was going to come back around and shoot her. And so to make it look like she had already been shot, she put her hand in the blood of her friend and smeared it all over her so that she would look like she was also all bloodied up and had been hit. Let's watch a few moments from this testimony and then we'll discuss.
There's a door between our classroom and the window, and then he went to the other classroom. And then he went, there's a door between our classrooms, and he went through there and shot my teacher and told my teacher goodnight and shot her in the head. And then he shot some of my classmates and the whiteboard. When I went to the backpacks, he shot my friend that was next to me, and I thought he was gonna come back to the room, so I grabbed the blood and put it all over me. And
what did you do then when you put the blood on yourself?
Just stay quiet, and then I grabbed my teacher's phone and called 911.
What did you tell 911?
I told her that we need help and to send the police in our classroom.
Right. Or things that you want different, what would it be?
To have security.
Do you feel safe at school? Why not?
Because is that only to happen again?
And you think it's going to happen again?
The entire story is, I mean, there's words, heartbreaking, but you can't describe the level of wrong that is. No 11-year-old should have to recount an experience like that. No person, obviously. But when you see it coming from an 11-year-old girl, it's just incomprehensible. No kid should go to school afraid that they might get shot. That's not something in a civilized, developed country that should happen. I know you've all seen these numbers before, but I'm going to throw up a graphic of the United States gun violence compared to other countries. We stand way apart. Something's wrong. And we hear all the time from anti-gun reform advocates, there's all these other things. Oh, it's mental health, it's violent video games, it's the security of the schools. And while I want to address those too, let's look into how we can make schools safe and secure. Let's look into mental health issues in the country. Of course, I want to discuss that. But we can't ignore the massive, obvious, in-our-face issue, which is gun laws. Other countries have all of these other areas that they also have issues with. Mental health is a great example of that. Lots of other countries are dealing with mental health problems. But their gun violence is nothing compared to the United States. And that is because we don't regulate guns in a common sense way. We're not talking about taking away your Second Amendment, nothing. We're talking about doing very common sense regulations and laws that will protect lives undeniably. Now, a lot of times when we discuss this, people will say, I hear liberals say common sense a lot. What do they mean by that? So let's just go through four big, main, easy, very popular among the country type policies that we could implement. Universal background checks, red flag laws, raising the age to purchase these weapons, and waiting periods. And that would, in many of the past cases we've seen, make a difference. And it would prevent future things from happening going forward. It just doesn't make any sense why everyone wouldn't be on board with this. And polling shows actual Americans are on board with this. But then for some reason, Republican politicians specifically are standing in the way of doing anything. And I've heard a lot of people witness, after witnessing these horrible tragedies and then the inaction by the people in power, I've heard people express the sentiment of there's no hope. It's impossible. I kind of give up. We see time and time again, horrible things happen that you would think would wake every single person in power up, but it doesn't. And I just want to say, while I totally empathize with that, it is enraging watching those people who are supposed to solve issues like this in our country not do it. And you do have those moments where you're like, if it hasn't happened in the past with all the tragedy we've seen, why is something going to change now? But I do think 11-year-old girls like the one we just watched, and all of the young people we've seen, all of the other innocent lives that have been lost in mass shootings, they all deserve us to not give up. They at least deserve that from us. We can't single-handedly make this happen, but the one thing we can dedicate to each one of those lost lives and each one of the people like the one we just watched who are forever traumatized by an event like this is to not give up. We can at least give that to them. And so while it's gonna look impossible many days, I beg each one of you, because this is what causes change to happen, to not give up, to keep pushing everything you can possibly do to keep this issue on the front of mind of the politicians and of Americans broadly. We previously discussed the 11-year-old girl in Uvalde, Texas, who testified to Congress about her experiences watching her friend and her teacher get killed. And one of the things that I think when I watch something like that is surely everyone's overcome with emotion and thinks we have to act. We have to implement at least some common sense gun reform. We can talk also about mental health and all those things, but step one, common sense gun reform, universal background checks, red flag laws, waiting periods, raising the age for when you can get guns, right? Well, as y'all know, that's not the way that everyone responds to these tragedies. Unfortunately, a lot of people, Republican politicians specifically, see their whole job when a tragedy like this happens as standing in the way of anything from being done, at least on the issue of guns. Nothing can happen in regard to gun control after these tragedies, and that's what they see their job as. And they kind of offer up vague solutions, as I kind of alluded to earlier. Oh, it's mental health. Oh, it's school security. But they don't propose specific solutions. And then their primary focus is distracting from the big blinking red LED sign, which is gun control. And Louie Gohmert did this exactly on the House floor recently, saying that the reason, maybe the reason that mass shootings have gone up is because kids don't pray in school anymore.
We were told in debate last week, don't want to hear any more about social media, violent video games, Hollywood, mental illness, and they sure don't want to hear any more about prayers. They're disgusted hearing about prayers. Don't want to hear any more about fatherlessness, drug use. Look, maybe if we heard more prayers from leaders of this country instead of taking God's name in vain, we wouldn't have the mass killings like we didn't have before prayer was eliminated from school.
What do you say to that? I know this is such a cliche thing, but Louis, how do you sleep with yourself? Honestly, I know that someone like Louie Gohmert is completely aware that implementing common sense gun reform that would not be infringing on anyone's Second Amendment right would save lives. It would save countless lives. But for some reason, whether it's appealing to a radical part of his base, keeping those NRA funds flowing, I don't know what his reason is, but for some reason, he would rather stand in the way of doing any of that. And he would rather say, oh, maybe it's because kids don't pray in school. Really? Imagine staring in the face of all of the evidence that shows the reason why America stands so much apart, or is set so much apart from all these other countries and the level of gun violence we have, is because we don't have common sense gun laws. Imagine looking at all that evidence and going, I don't care. I would rather not just ignore the evidence, but actively work against anyone from acting in a logical manner based on that evidence to prevent tragedies from happening in this country. Honestly, that clip looks like someone doing a parody of a anti-gun reform Republican politician. Like, that's not even real. Oh, no, it's not gun. It's not the lack of gun reform or the lack of common sense gun laws. It's kids not doing their morning prayer in class. You don't believe that. No way anyone would believe that. And I'm so down. Again, like, I'll say this 1,000 times whenever these conversations come up. Let's invest in mental health. Let's try to promote happy, healthy, supporting families. Let's secure our schools. But then let's also implement common sense gun reform. It's just not that hard. But he makes it hard. People like him make it hard. And they try to distract. And even as ludicrous as ways as saying, oh, it's morning prayers that have gone away that caused these mass shootings in schools. We're continuing our discussion around gun violence that's been reignited due to the recent mass shootings in Buffalo and Uvalde, and then a bunch of other mass shootings just since those two. But one of the talking points you'll hear the most, I think you've all probably heard this whenever a tragedy like this happens, is it's not guns that kill people, it's people that kills people. And at a really fundamental level, okay, that's true, right? Guns don't fly around and shoot people. A person has to pull the trigger. And oftentimes in every mass shooting, it was someone who's deranged and has horrible motivations. All of that, I agree to. But what you and I understand and why we see that slogan or that talking point to be so harmful is the person who's already deranged, has those bad motivations, their ability to kill people and to kill a higher number of people comes down to how effective of a killing tool, a weapon they have to do that. And so at a basic level, I think everyone understands this, right? If I say you absolutely have to be attacked, you have no choice. Someone's going to attack you at your home. But you can decide if it's going to be someone with just their bare hands or someone with an AR-15. Everyone knows they would choose the person with the bare hands. So then you understand then, if someone's deranged and they have psychotic ambitions to kill people, but they can't get their hands on something that does that act, killing, so well, then they're not going to be able to cause as much suffering, as many deaths, as much carnage. So then without changing the hearts and minds of these people, which we should also try to do, of course, but without having to get into that real complex topic, how do you prevent someone from becoming so deranged? You are limiting the amount of damage they can do. So a great example of this is something that happened in California a few days ago. This happened at a hospital. Radio call went out reporting a person armed with a knife at the hospital. Officers determined that someone had stabbed three hospital employees. SWAT officers entered the hospital around 5:25 p.m. The FBI was at the scene and offering assistance where needed. LAPD Chief Michael Moore said around 5:30 that officers had cornered the suspect alone in the area of the emergency room at the Encino Hospital. "We've locked it down. We've isolated the individual," he said. So a man goes into a hospital trying to kill people. He stabs three people. FBI corners him. Outcome, no one dies. In Tulsa, if you remember, a man went into a medical facility. So these stories are very similar. Two men go into medical facilities trying to kill people. One of them has a knife. One of them has a gun. The one with the gun kills three people. The one with the knife stabs three people and no one dies. So you can see the point that I'm getting to. While, of course, it is the fault of the individuals, it is the fault of those two men for trying to kill people. All the blame is on them. Their ability to actually enact the violence and the suffering and the death that they were trying to did come down to the type of weapon they had. And so if we can prevent certain people, like those two guys, from getting, or at least the one who did get the gun, from getting such effective killing tools, weapons that are designed to kill as many people as possible, we're going to save lives. And we can do that. And why anyone standing in the way of that, honestly, while I can tell you the reasons, I don't understand them. Like, I don't understand how appealing to a radical base or appealing to NRA would possibly come above in your mind, in your heart, protecting innocent people from getting killed in cold blood. One of the biggest things I'm confused about is watching the way that certain Republican politicians are acting about this issue. It's disturbing. But this example shows, while yes, people kill people, people's ability to kill a lot of people will come down to if they can get their hands on something that's designed to do that or not. Things are really heating up for people around Donald Trump. We saw some bombshells in the January 6th hearings, but additionally, his former advisor and someone who spread the big lie a lot, Peter Navarro, was recently arrested and is having to beg MAGA for money to fight his legal battles. What a fallen star. Reading from Business Insider, former Trump advisor Peter Navarro said he was put in handcuffs and leg irons while being arrested after trying to board a flight at the airport in Nashville on Friday. Navarro was indicted on charges of contempt of Congress on Friday after repeatedly defying the orders of the House committee investigating the January 6th riot per unsealed court documents. So he didn't comply with a January 6th committee subpoena, and because of that, he got arrested. And after that arrest, the desperate complaining immediately began with him calling the FBI agents who arrested him Nazis. Okay. And saying he was treated like he was in Al-Qaeda. Of course, the Justice Department is disputing his characterization of those events. But now, as greater men such as Rudy Giuliani have had to do after being left in Donald Trump's dust, he's out asking for money from MAGA to fight his legal battles. Let's take a look.
It's just, I mean, this is so wrong, Sebin. This book, Taking Back Trump's America, help me, please. I'm looking at $500,000 in legal expenses, according to some legal experts, or more. This could go to $1 million. I've got to raise that money. I can't kill my retirement by defending these baseless charges. Taking Back Trump's America, please. Go to Amazon right now.
All
order
right, guys,
that book.
The book.
Yikes. Happy I'm not you, Peter. I will say in all seriousness, we should not take pleasure in just because we don't like someone watching them crash and burn. That's just not cool. No, I'm kidding. That was awesome. So in a world that's so tough, it's nice to see people who try to assault our democracy and spread lies about a free and fair election get a little bit of punishment. Okay, that's pretty nice. Like I said, he refused to comply with a January 6th committee subpoena. And it's a good sign that the Justice Department is finally getting a little bit more justifiably aggressive in their enforcement. And hopefully we'll see that trend continue. Of course, only with crimes that have actually been committed, not for political reasons. But if you can uncover real crimes, the Justice Department, even if it's touchy people, need to actually take appropriate actions. I'll be following this story closely, seeing what happens with Peter Navarro on my channel. You can check it out, Luke Beasley, on YouTube. That's B-E-A-S-L-E-Y. If you're watching on YouTube or listening to the podcast, there will be a link in the description that you can just click to check out my channel. I encourage you to do so. We have a massive story that came out. The leading candidate in the GOP primary for governor in Michigan, Ryan Kelly, was arrested for his involvement in the January 6th riots. This is insane. Ryan Kelly, a Republican running for governor in Michigan who was at the Capitol during the January 6th attack, was arrested at his home in Allendale, Michigan on Thursday morning, according to Mara Schneider, a special agent with the FBI. Mr. Kelly is the first person running for election in a major state or federal race to be charged in connection with the attack. According to a criminal complaint, Mr. Kelly was charged with committing violence against a person or property on restricted grounds, damaging federal property, disorderly conduct, and entering a restricted building or grounds without permission. All four charges are misdemeanors, according to Bill Miller. Now, Ryan Kelly is expectedly denying these claims, but this video, I can't tell if it's him, but allegedly it is him entering the Capitol, waving the crowd along with him. Let's look. He also sent out a message when he got arrested that just said political prisoner. That was it. Political prisoner. Which honestly, I think the right wing either never knew or right when January 6th happened, forgot what that actually means. Like when you say political prisoner, that has a meaning and you're not using it correctly. Because if I posed a hypothetical to you and I said an individual broke into a federal building, vandalized it a bunch, fought with the police, do you think they should be held criminally responsible? Every conservative will go, yeah, of course. What do you mean? But then because it's January 6th, now any enforcement of our laws makes the people who it's enforced on political prisoners. That makes no sense. Like just because you did it for political reasons, because you believed Trump's lies, doesn't make us the ones doing something wrong and making you a political prisoner. I don't know. But obviously he should have due process. And if he can prove that he wasn't there, then he shouldn't be held accountable, of course. But all the available evidence we have now, not looking too good for him. And funny enough, this is making an already insane gubernatorial primary in Michigan on the GOP side even more wild. If you guys remember, this was the same primary where five candidates were disqualified from running because they used fraudulent signatures to get on the ballot. Like you would think it wouldn't get any more bizarre than in one primary, five of the candidates fraudulently got on the ballot. But then the leading candidate gets arrested for storming the United States Capitol. Like, American politics is unbelievable. And the scariest part of this is this could very likely make him more popular among the Republican base in Michigan. In any sane world, finding out one of the candidates in a race for governor tried to violently overturn the results of a free and fair election will get you immediately banished from polite society. But in the wacko world we live in, this can make him a rising star. You already know he's going to have a successful podcast. And with that, I'm going to do the most shameless transition to self-promotion. Speaking of podcasts, you can listen to my podcast by searching Luke Beasley on any platform or go to YouTube and search Luke Beasley. Mwah, very nice. We'll be back with more after this. A few days ago, David did a story about a man who went to an Arlington City Council meeting and said the punishment for being gay is death, or it should be death. That man came from the same church as a pastor that we're going to look at today in a disturbing clip that has gone viral. Steadfast Church is the name of the church. And he said, just like his, I guess, colleague or someone else who went to that same church, that gay people should be killed. But this one went as far as to specifically say how they should be shot in the back of the head. Warning, this is very disturbing, but let's take a look.
I'd say is the answer, is the solution for the homosexual in 2022, here in the New Testament, here in the book of Romans, that they are worthy of death. These people should be put to death. Every single homosexual in our country should be charged with the crime, the abomination of homosexuality that they have. They should be convicted in a lawful trial. They should be sentenced with death. They should be lined up against the wall and shot in the back of the head. That's what God teaches. That's what the Bible says. You don't like it, you don't like God's word, because that is what God says.
I mean, what is there to say to that? It's disturbing, it's disgusting, all the things, but the fact that he's pretending to be expressing these views because he feels it is the word of God is horrible. I mean, you are hateful, deeply, deeply hateful. You don't feel called by God to say and do these things. You have a deep hatred in your heart and are desperate to find an excuse to spew it everywhere that you can in the world. And then let's address what he's saying seriously. I don't know why we would do that, but let's do it anyways. If you don't understand that your specific religion's sets of beliefs can't be enforced on everyone in a country, you don't understand our Constitution. You don't understand how a functioning society would work. Free democratic society. So even if he genuinely believed this was his religion, this is what God was calling him to do, there is absolutely no way you could figure out a way to justify enforcing your specific beliefs on an entire country of people and wanting to, just got a lot of rage. I just almost had like a heart palpitation. What the heck? And kill people because of your religion or your interpretation of your religion. And let me make something clear. There are wonderful Christians. There are beautiful, so many Christians. I'm Christian raised and tons of people around me are amazing Christians. They serve the country. They serve the people around them. They see Jesus's teachings as being service oriented, helping people who are disadvantaged, loving people unconditionally, all those things. And they're amazing. This is not all Christians. And like I said before, I don't even think this is Christianity. I think this man is using Christianity to express views he already has deep down in his heart because he is a hateful person. For some reason, the concept of anyone being different, anyone loving different, scares him. Probably born out of deep, deep insecurity. But then he uses a religious text to justify spewing his hatred. And I'm noticing as broader society moved forward, like over the last few generations, we moved forward a lot on LGBTQ issues. A small portion is kind of reacting to that progress by launching way backwards. And we can't allow this as a country. We can't allow a small minority of this country to inflict pain on other groups of people just because of their weird, distorted, perverted understanding of their own religion. That's not acceptable. And I think every religious person or non-religious person should be able to unite around the fact, regardless of our disagreements otherwise, that this should not be allowed and this should not be accepted in our country. He's calling for the murder of people just because they live differently than him and don't subscribe to his particular set of religious beliefs. As I said, I was raised Christian. I know tons of Christians in my life, and I know all of them would be just as disgusted as I am by watching this. And so how about you go out, if you're someone like him and you believe what he believes, how about you actually do something in the world that's good?
I see this. And I had someone point this out to me, and I never want to forget to point this out. Tons of people who are religious do amazing things with it. That's what I do with my religion. I do good things with it. It motivates people to do good things. And tons of the charity and service that we see in our country is done by people who are motivated by their religious beliefs. So this isn't a massive thing on religion. This is people who only want to use a religion to feel better than other people. And that's him. And I just wish I could look at him in the face and say, how about you do something good for the world? Right now, you're sitting, you're festering in your hate for other people. And you're trying to get your audience and your followers and supporters to believe the same thing. And you're threatening people's lives. What good is that doing for the world? What good is that doing for the God that you believe in? What good is that doing in living a life of Jesus? It's not. Everyone understands if they read enough of the Bible, while there's a lot of stuff in there, like, whoa, what's going on? I can't. At least if you zero in on the Jesus stories, he was a very, very giving and loving and serving person. So how about you go out and you give and you love and you serve, you disgusting human being? But no, you just want to stand there. You want to get the attention of people. And you want to talk about how much you hate people for being different than you. I'm so sick of having to listen to this. And he should be arrested, right? That's a criminal level of threatening of violence. A judge did rule, luckily, that Steadfast Church will be evicted. They're going to be evicted for allowing threats of violence, so hooray on that. But super scary and harmful stuff. You can hear further discussions about this topic in general. I'm always getting fired up about people going after already marginalized groups for absolutely no reason on my channel. If you want to watch that, you can go to Luke Beasley on YouTube. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, listening to the podcast, there will be a link in the description you can click to check me out. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, everybody, I have for you a truly bizarre clip of Marjorie Greene and Matt Gaetz talking about a weird fantasy of something or another. And I just need to apologize up front before we look at this. Some percent of you are going to, whenever you watch this, you're going to throw up. Not really. You'll be fine. But it's cringy. So let's take a look.
Favorite member?
I have
he's
a lot
mine.
Of...
He's mine. I'm on record.
He's at the top for me.
I would rather give Nancy Pelosi a sponge bath than endure like one dinner
that's
with
disgusting.
Adam Schiff. Totally.
That's...
But just to bring this into Technicolor for you. Okay, like a lot of people would say maybe Pelosi is their least favorite member. No way.
But
Schiff
would you
is
trim
like
her
utterly
toenails?
The most.
Would you trim her toenails?
I would trim her toenails with my teeth before I would go to
Damn,
dinner with
impressive.
Adam Kinzinger.
That's really impressive.
Or Adam right. Schiff, I should say.
So here's how I feel.
Now, I know some of you will watch that and be like, it was weird, but why are you making a big deal? First off, it's just kind of a fun story. A lot of heavy stuff lately. Let's laugh at a couple goofballs. But also, there is a larger important point. So first, let's just go through how weird what they were saying was. For some reason, to express his hatred for Adam Schiff, he had to do some big, long fantasy about giving Nancy Pelosi a scrub-down bath and then biting her toes. Toenails? I don't know why that was so specific and seemed kind of pre-planned. It's maybe something he's thought about before, but really weird. So that's that. But then the larger, more meaningful and serious point is this is a great example of how right-wing politics has gotten so far away from serious discussions about how to address problems in our country. And I know you know that, but watching clips like that really remind you of it. Marjorie Greene doesn't have any committee assignments. She's not working on policies each day. She has her one vote in Congress, but besides that, she's not really doing much. And what she is doing is being a little media figure. And that's what we've seen a lot of these Republican politicians become. It's not about policy. It's not about implementing policy that will help improve the lives of your constituents. No, it's about being a media figure. It's about being an influencer. She has a little MTG Live. That's what it's about. And so right there, he's being a little funny guy, you know, saying some weird stuff that might get his audience to laugh. being completely unserious and not at all trying to address the many, many issues that need to be addressed in our country. And so while the core reason I wanted to play that clip is because it's just absurd, and let's just think one more time about Matt Gaetz saying he would rather give Nancy Pelosi a scrub down bath and cut her toenails with his teeth than go out to dinner with Adam Schiff. I don't think he's inviting you, Bubba, but okay. Bizarre, but also an indication, like I said, that they don't care. It's not serious. This isn't about making change for their constituents. They're just trying to go viral. They're trying to be provocative, trying to be the biggest name in the Republican Party, tweet out stuff, own the libs. That's what it's really about. It's no longer at all policy focused, and that's super, super sad, and something we need to continually call out. And we need to demand of the politicians that we like and support that they stay focused on the real issues. I appreciate the Dave Pakman Show having me fill in today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'll just plug one more time. Go check me out, Luke Beasley on YouTube. We got it, Papa Lockin over there. You can also listen to the show as a podcast, just Luke Beasley. Anywhere you go, you should be able to find me, Instagram, Twitter, all those good things. Luke P. Beasley on Twitter. And I will hopefully see you guys.
Yeah, I'm faded, fake faces, I raise them, California. Couple days I'm smiling so we could think I'm straight. Why can't I tell the truth? Playing J. Cole back then with a clear end goal. Like it all made sense. I needed myself and nobody else. Okay, let's go. From how it looks, man, it's hard to complain. And I just been praying that when I get older that I got some smile in me that can remain. My money is long, but I got some new wishes. I feel like as long as they got for my names. Man, all I can wish is the mask that I wear and the faces below it is looking the same. Like, oh, you've been in this fight. I can see it in your eyes. Like, I don't wanna waste no time, yeah.
Money making while we're breaking, it's amazing. California, celebrated or berated, it's been faded. California, I'm worried the hills are swarming with dead ends and the bots performing. Don't
mistaken. You can break big till you get sick.
From the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth.
the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
With the failure of last week's Summit of the Americas for President Biden, and with new caravans of migrants heading north of Mexico to the U.S. border, it's become more evident than ever that the harvest of empire is still with the United States. We will not be able to confront the growing migration crisis as other European countries also have migration crises until the countries of the West and the United States come to a reckoning with their centuries of colonial domination of the peoples of Asia, Africa, and Latin America.
Today, Democracy Now! Co-host, journalist, professor, and author Juan Gonzalez on Harvest of Empire, a history of Latinos in America. He's just updated his best-selling book that's in hundreds of classrooms and universities and high schools across the country. It uplifts the stories of people like the Guatemalan activist Rigoberta Menchú, who won the Nobel Peace Prize for helping to publicize the plight of Guatemala's indigenous peoples under the brutal U.S.-backed government.
Can it be that we will not be victims of genocide tomorrow?
Yo no tengo ninguna garantía.
I do not have any guarantees.
In Guatemala, si lo que hay
if what exists in Guatemala is persecution, matanza, murder, killing, if what you have is insecurity,
yo prefiero romper la frontera,
then I prefer to cross the border and go to a place with more security.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A bipartisan group of senators has reached a watered-down agreement on gun safety that could lead to some new federal gun restrictions, as well as increased funding for mental health and school security. The plan would also provide funding to states to create red flag laws that would prohibit some people from owning firearms. The deal, however, does not include a ban on assault weapons or raise the age required to buy assault weapons to 21. It also does not establish universal background checks. In a statement, President Biden said, quote, "It does not do everything I think is needed, but it reflects important steps in the right direction and would be the most significant gun safety legislation to pass Congress in decades." The deal was reached by 20 senators, 10 Democrats, 10 Republicans. Negotiations began after the recent mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas, where 19 fourth graders and their two teachers were shot dead, and the massacre in Buffalo when a white supremacist attacked a grocery store, shooting dead 10 people, all of whom were Black. Both shooters were 18 years old. On Sunday, Christian Hayne, vice president of the gun control group Brady, praised the bipartisan deal.
We have not seen the likes of a framework like what we see in this package for the last 30 years. And I think, you know, it's significant not only because of how this can have a real impact in lives, but to me, it feels like a moment in time and a sign of things to come. Right. This is sort of testing ground that we can pass bipartisan gun laws and the sky won't fall. And for all of those reasons, I think that this agreement is really important.
The bipartisan Senate deal on gun safety was announced a day after hundreds of thousands of people across the country took to the streets